We all go 6 feet deep in the ground. I think now they're digging them about 4.5 feet to save money. But we all end up in a casket. And people wipe their eyes. Because we're gone. It's called fact. If you saw where I grew up, the time period would have been in the 1950s, but if you saw it, you would have thought it was 1850. Log house, milk cow, plow horse, no bathtub, no commode. Like Coca-Cola's, little, none of that. No. I never heard anyone say we were poor. Not once. No one ever said, man, we are really up against it here. I wonder why somebody doesn't bail us out. No. I ran up on Miss Kay when she was 14. There's an old saying in the South, if you marry them when they're about 15 or 16, they'll pick your ducks. If you wait till they get to be 20, they'll pick your pocket. So Miss Kay and I married early.
Bill started school and we were so poor. So in love, but so poor. Baby on the way. Actually, Alan was born, I was 17 years old, and Phil was 18 years old. So we were basically two kids with a kid. But you have to grow up, and you do. That's what you do.
Now, when I got to college, I was on my way to being a bone to be chewed, as they say.
I started seeing the change in Phil, and this really came when he started spending a lot of time with the football team.
Parties in college, you know. It was the 60s. Y'all remember the 60s, don't you?
What I saw was Phil, who had never drank before, started drinking. And what happened with me was, it was scary to me. Jason was born. So thrilled about another boy, Phil was happier than ever. Unfortunately, the drinking got worse. He would be mad and just be in and out like a flash. And I knew then, but I didn't want to believe it, was running around on me. Probably was smoking dope, other things, pills he took, things like that. It was just all new to me, the whole thing.
I owned a beer joint when some guy came in with a Bible and he wanted to introduce me to Jesus. I ran him away. I said, get out of here. I'd take another drink.
Then we have our new baby, Willie Jess. So there I was, a barmaid who doesn't drink, and had three little boys. I've been fighting for this marriage for a long time, and it's not working. But what went on next was horrible. It was like the nightmare of my life.
I got in a big barroom brawl. The laws got after me. I went to the woods, of course, and hid out.
Phil came to me and said, I probably won't surface for 2 or 3 months. Do the best you can with what's left here. And he was gone. He became more and more mean and mean-spirited. And what I would tell my boys all the time is, that's not your daddy. That's the devil in your daddy.
I would say the low point is when I ran Miss K and the kids off. You're all alone, no hope, miserable. That's when I began to serious contemplate, is there a way out of all this? So I came to Miss K and she said, you know the guy that came up there to the beer joint that time and wanted to talk with you? I said, yep. And you ran him off? I said, yep. Why don't you sit down with him and just see what he has to say? So I sat down with this guy. He said, Phil, what do you think the gospel is? And I said, I don't know, gospel music on the radio or something like that. He said, you don't even know what it is. I said, I don't guess I do. I didn't even know what the gospel of Jesus was. So when he went through Jesus coming down in flesh through a little virgin girl, Mary, dying on a cross, being buried and raised from the dead, I'm like, how in the world did I ever miss that? I had missed it. I was blown away when I heard that Jesus died for me, was buried and raised from the dead. Something so, it is simple but profound, that happened back there almost 2,000 years ago. I had never heard it.
When we came back home, I think there was a note that said they had gone to the church building. So we headed in there, and when we got into the auditorium, I just stopped because there he was up in the baptistry with a man. And the boys all stopped, and they were on each side of me. And I remember just looking at them, and I heard Phil say, I want to make Jesus the Lord of my life. I want to follow him from this day forward. And I looked down at each one of the boys. Tears were rolling down their eyes. Even three-and-a-half-year-old Willie Jess, big tears were coming down. And the next thing I knew, he was baptized. And I come up, and the boys started hollering and singing, jumping all over the place. And they said, My daddy saved. They were so happy. And it was the complete family then.
I said, I'm fixing to hang another gear, and I'm turning from my sinful past, and I am fixing to make a valiant attempt to be good. I said, I've never tried it before. I told the guy when he studied with me, he said, just love God and love your neighbor and try to be good. I'm like, I've never tried that before. He said, can you try? I said, I can try. See, you got rednecks, then you have river rats. So I'm reading over in Romans chapter 12, be good to your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. Do not return evil for evil. The river rats tend to be far better thieves than your just local rednecks. You be good to them and don't return evil for evil. I was fishing for a living. It's my livelihood. I'm working my tail off. They're hungry. Feed them. These river rats would steal my fish. I'd caught several of them before then. Usually I'd just come up, roar out there, come up with my shotgun and say, the next person who moves dies. They're stealing my fish here, Lord. They're hungry, feed them. And you want me to do what? Do not return evil for evil. Well, I have to see if that will work, but it makes no earthly sense, that's for sure. So one day I heard a motor slow down. These guys pull over to my float, and I'm watching them through the bushes. So I said, I'm going to be good to them, but I'm carrying my gun just in case they're not good to me. And I'm going to do what the Lord said. I'm going to be good to them. So I roar up on them, and they're getting my net almost up in their boat, and they look up, and they see this guy coming. They be me, wide open. I said, what were you boys doing with that net? And they said, oh, is that what that was? I said, yeah, that'd be a hook net. It belongs to me. I said, here's the good news. I'm going to raise the net, and whatever's in there, I'm going to give them to you. And when I said that, they looked at each other, and they said, they left me looking back, and all of a sudden, up and down the river, they quit stealing my fish. I just gave them what they were trying to steal. I took that to mean God was right all along. The first year in sales, I had turned to God. First year sales, Duck Commander, $8,000. I said, Miss Kay, we are rolling. She said, we are going to starve to death. I said, no, we're not going to starve. We'll be all right. This is Alan, Jason, Willie, and Jeff. They all run the company and their wives. So one of them told me the other day, he said, Dad, you remember when you started out with that $8,000 worth of duck calls? I said, yep. They said, this year we're going to sell close to 1 million duck calls. It was either dog luck, but I am giving the credit to God Almighty in heaven for the duck call sales, the fish that were in the nets way back, for my life. I'm giving the credit to the Almighty. And we shall see at the end how it turns out. I feel pretty good about it.
How do you make the duck sound?
You gotta have air pressure. You get a lot of pressure behind your tongue.
Like a kazoo? Like a kazoo?
Not so much kazoo.
Ready?
Look.
Yeah, like
Dad always told us, a man should be able to provide for his family. And that includes food and everything else, because he always told us at one point there was no such thing as a grocery store. Totally got picked on a ton by my brothers. You know, we'd go out, we all played basketball, which is funny because my dad played football. And so we'd be out, we'd play horse or something. And if I won, they would, you know, give me a swirly or give me one of those sweaty armpit. I don't know how you say that. My dad actually, as he was getting the duck call business started, he was a commercial fisherman. So wasn't a lot of money, but we ate real good. I would go out as a kid and run the motor for my dad, and as he picked up these big hoop nets, and I would ride with my mom to the fish market and sell fish, and that's kind of how we made a living. Here's the thing, my parents took in so many like transient people they'd see on the side of the road. They're like, y'all want something to eat? They're like, yeah, we're hungry. They'd pick them up, bring them down the river, feed them, let them stay a couple days, give them a little money. The thing was, my parents didn't have a lot of money at the time, but my dad just wanted to share Jesus with people and, get them to heaven. So it didn't matter what color your skin was, how bad your past is, they were just going to help people out. Later in life, when I got up to about 18, I met a couple guys when I was right toward the end of my senior year, and they were doing stuff a little bit different, and I just thought, maybe I should just, hang out with these guys some and just kind of experience what the world has to offer. And it got pretty ugly there. Lots of drug use, alcohol. I pretty much did anything that was put in front of me. I remember smoking a joint that was dipped in formaldehyde. They called it a wet daddy. taking pills. To be honest with you, I don't know what all pills I took. I remember waking up. I had one leg in my truck door, and it was on a gravel road, and I was all skin up, my arms. And I drove somewhere that night, and to this day, I don't know what I did that night. And I hope I didn't run over somebody. I don't know. I knew at that point I was really off the tracks. But the funny thing is, I didn't stop. I got up the next day. Where's the drugs? Where's the alcohol? Let's just keep going. I was hiding that from my parents, and it was just the battle of trying to, was just nothing to look forward to. So empty. No decency whatsoever. One night, got drunk, went to the movies, and my brother Willie left a note on my truck, and he said, "I know what you've been up to. We need to talk." I show up down at Dad's house at 8 in the morning. All my brother's trucks are there, and I'm thinking, what are they all doing here? And I go in the house, and they're just all sitting around the couch looking at me.
It was Jason, Alan, Phil, and Willie. We're in the living room. I couldn't even get in the living room. I couldn't make myself even go in there.
My heart just starts beating out of my chest. And my dad said, "Son, are you ready to change?"
He said, "I just want you to know that we've come to a decision as a family. And it's going to be either you are going to join us, following God, or you're going to go on your own. And you can just, you know, good luck to you in this world, but you'll just be on your own. So there's your two choices."
I just fell down on my knees and started crying. I said, "What took y'all so long?"
And he said, "Dad, I don't deserve to come back. I've been horrible. Let me tell you some more." And Phil said, "No, son, you've told me enough."
You know, I've seen my dad cry maybe 3 times, and that was one of them. And to see my dad that upset, and it was tears of joy.
"I want you to know that God loves you and we love you, but you just can't live like that." And he said, "I know. I want to come back home."
My brothers, they were all crying, and we, at one point, we just got in the middle of the room and just all got down on our knees and just cried and just prayed to God, just thank you for getting me out of this, because I'm done living the way I've been living. And I remember Dad saying, "My prodigal son has returned," and it was just one of the best days of my life. And so he said, "I'm going to put you on house arrest. You cannot leave this house for 3 months, and you got to duck hunt every single day." I said, "All right, Dad, I think I can do that."
I'm smiling a little bit because you can't see it.
You have a great listener's mind.
I always tell them, look, I look a little rough around the edges, but I always remember this. The man appointed by God to pave the way for the Savior of the world. John the who? They all said, "John the Baptist." I said, "He looked rougher than I do." Trust me.
Thank you.
was it? It is good. I had to show it for two reasons. One, I figured that's the only way I was going to get you guys to watch the Robertsons. And two, and most importantly, it's just to show how a family born in the pits of poverty and corruption can turn to God and just be fruitful, have a fruitful life, have everything they need. They have family, health, wealth, and is it because they worked their fingers to the bone for it? Of course. But they didn't do it without their own plan or their own ways. They did it through God's will. Pick up on my notes here. Just looking at the title of the video, I Am Second, that explains it all. Three simple words. And that's where I had to bring myself to this week with putting a message together. And that's why it meant so much when I watched it and, you know, and read the subtitles and just read into it more. It's amazing. And there's more on it that you can read about and watch. It's really cool about the family. Every dollar they've made, every blessing given to them, and every meal set before them in front of millions of viewers every week on television, it doesn't matter what it is or where they're going in life, they give all the glory and success, their success, to God. Phil, for example, he was a pretty wretched man in his day, partying, leaving family at home, running around on his wife, running the bars. He was a horrible guy. I imagine he wasn't very much fun to hang out with. He was doing his own works, doing what he thought he needed to do to keep things running, and it caused him to lose it all. But he got it all back by listening to one man. It takes one person. Too low. Oh, yeah. It's hot in here. He got it all back by giving to others when he had nothing. And that's something that we forget in life. Helping others. Loving your neighbor. Hebrews 13:16 is a good example of that. But do not forget to do good and to share, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased. Another one is Proverbs 19:17. He who has pity on the poor lends to the Lord, and he will pay back what he has given. With his fishing business, guys were stealing off of him. It didn't make sense. God's works don't make sense in the world. But he tried it, you know, he gave to they were people in need. They were probably starving, running up and down the river, stealing, so they could feed their families. When he had nothing at all himself, his family was starving, you know, he gave them everything he had in that fishing net. And, you know, he was loving his neighbors, he was giving to the needy, he was, you know, sharing everything he had when he had nothing, and wow, it was returned to him a million times, you know. He just went out on that limb of faith, and it worked for him, and it turned his whole life around. Another example is his son Jep. Just to quickly talk about him, about his fall and rise. He knew the Lord. He grew up knowing the Lord because of his dad turning his life around. They said he was, 3 years old when Phil turned his life around, and lived a good childhood. And then at the age 18, tried it on his own, tried to do his works his way. and it got him into a lot of trouble. He got disconnected from God and everyone around him. Nobody wanted to be around him. And it's the same with so many other people in the world today. Everybody tries to do everything on their own. There's even times that we do it. I do it all the time. I tried doing it all week, and it doesn't work. Even if it doesn't make sense, you have to go out on faith, and man, does it come to you quick. But it just, I don't, it shows. It just shows in people whether they're doing it their way or God's way. It shows in their fruits. And there's not much to show around here anymore with people. People doing it their own way. And it's like, as Pastor says, you know, we have stones in our hearts that we need to clear. We need to get rid of those stones so God can fill our hearts and work in us. And carrying people, too many people carry around secrets and regrets that clog up their thinking in their hearts, and they fall on their face. Ephesians 5:11, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. That was what Jep had to do, his son. You know, he lived in darkness. His world was falling apart. He was hiding it from his family. He had so many stones and darkness in him that he had to expose it. His brother exposed it for him, but he had to come to it, you know. And he was turned around. He was transformed at that moment, you know. And now he's completely restored, just like the rest of the family. And it can happen to anybody. We look at people like that on TV or that with mega wealth or anything like that. It's God's not a respecter of people. I'm not saying you have to go try to get rich or be on TV, but it's just a good example. People follow, you know, superstars and celebrities, and they're a living testimony that is great. It's made me think of many things just watching them. I'm their number one fan. And, you know, no matter what you're searching for in life, you just always have to remember to pray, seek God wholeheartedly, and let him in. And if it's at his will and his time, he will hand you the keys to all your desires.